We're only back with To the Point, talking today about Cuba as the funeral for Fidel Castro is scheduled for this coming Sunday. Donald Trump might not have plans for a hotel in Havana, but U.S. investors who got ahead of the curve do hope he'll be sympathetic to their business prospects, as we've heard. Tom Popper is president of Insight Cuba. That's a travel company that's been hosting trips to the island for 16 years. Good to have you on our program.
Great to be with you again, Warren.
Tell us, if you will, first of all, where we left off. What has the Obama initiative meant from an economic standpoint?
Well, it's been tremendous, both in the U.S. and Cuba. Certainly from the U.S. side, we've seen growth in hospitality, whether it's the cruise ships arriving in Cuba really for the first time since 1961. You have all the major cruise ships coming. Thousands of travel agencies across the country have become active. You have Priceline involved. Tour operators across the country are extraordinarily active. You have Airbnb has over 4,000 rental properties that they're selling. Google and Cisco are making investments to help the internet infrastructure, which is in tremendous need. And hundreds of other businesses, farming delegations from the middle of the United States have been going down there to negotiate trade deals with regard to food and agriculture. It's just been growing in a way that we've never seen before. And quite frankly, it's growing quicker than Cuba can handle. This is something they didn't anticipate back in 2014. But it's also been a boom for Cubans, local Cubans on the ground there, and they're benefiting in tremendous ways from the increased tourism in Havana and across the island in direct and indirect levels.
What about the direct flights to Havana? There are several airlines that are will take you now from the United States to Cuba.
That's for sure. Starting in October and most prominently this month, I mean, American Airlines, Delta United, having daily service. There's over 20 flights a day traveling to Havana and another 30 flights traveling to the other areas of the island. And this is, while the travel restrictions are still in place, they've been loosened enough so not only tour groups are able to travel to the island, but individuals are able to travel to the island. And we've seen since the beginning of 2015, tourism increase to Cuba by 150%. It's the most popular destination for Americans to go to. And it makes perfect sense. You have 50 years of pent-up demand for a location that's 90 miles away from the United States. It's relatively really easy and inexpensive to get to, but is rich culturally. It's incredibly safe. It's one of the safest countries in the hemisphere. You don't have to worry about terrorism or all the other things that are going on in the world. And you get to experience people that are warm, friendly, and as some of your guests said, they're so welcoming to Americans.
So now we have Donald Trump and his tweet about getting a better deal for the Cuban people and the American people as well. And if no change is made, he says he's going to terminate the deal. What's the Obama administration doing to try to cement things before Trump takes office?
That's a great question. I think part of the strategy for the Obama administration from the get-go, when they made the announcement on December 17th of 2014 about improved normalization between the U.S. and Cuba, was not only just to kind of talk the talk, but was to encourage and get U.S. companies like Insight Cuba, like the cruise companies, like the commercial airline carriers to make investments in Cuba, and understanding that not only would this lead to better relations, but it would further the policy of the United States and kind of help move Cuba into the 21st century. And so many companies have made significant investments and have a presence there. And so he's still encouraging it. Just recently, they talked about Google and trying to ink a deal that they've been negotiating for some time. We have Norwegian Cruise Lines and Royal Caribbean. They have dual authorization between both companies, so they're trying to get the business off the ground. And again, there's hundreds of companies working behind the scenes. We have manufacturing companies looking to build manufacturing plants. You have Cisco and Google already have a brain hub set up where they're trying to develop the talent. So when they bring in this infrastructure, it can be installed and utilized, and this could spread throughout the Cuban community and create jobs.
Have they been backing away at all, given the tweet that we've heard from Donald Trump, the kinds of things that he has said about Cuba over the years, and how this is still a totalitarian island? He put out a statement to that effect after he did his tweeting. He does want the country, he says, to move away from the horrors endured for too long. But have people been a little concerned about this insistence that things have to change, particularly given that they have to change in a way that Raul Castro, the one way that Raul Castro probably doesn't want them to change?
Well, it's very interesting. I think for the first week or two after the election, everybody was kind of thinking about what just happened. But I think as time goes on, and despite the tweets and other comments, and especially towards the end of the campaign when President-elect Trump spoke in front of the Cuban-American community in Miami and decried normalization and said he would get tough, you know, that's normal for a Republican presidential candidate to do. We've seen it in really every cycle. But we also know that, you know, we're going to have the first incoming president who's made a career, his family's made a career, his father made a career in hospitality. So he understands the importance that tourism has, the impact it has on not only the economy from where it's coming from, but on the local economy to where it's being exported from.
Okay.
So that's...
Let me go back to Brian Littell, again, formerly with the CIA. His latest book, History Will Absolve Me, Fidel Castro, Life and a Legacy, published by Kindle on the day of Fidel Castro's death. What can you tell us about, you were in the CIA, you're a security guy. What are the issues there, if there are any, with regard to Cuba?
I think in the CIA, I've been away for 18 years, so I'm not really too up to date with them. But I don't think Cuba is a high priority in CIA anymore. It was certainly back in the Kennedy years and Reagan years and in between. But today, no, I don't think so.
So what about the economic reforms then that Raul apparently, as you say, wants to implement? What impact would they have on such things as the political and human rights concerns that have been expressed by the hardliners?
Well, he's worried about that, of course. He doesn't want to be Cuba's Gorbachev by opening up too much or too fast. He doesn't want things to start getting destabilized. They already have a fair number of private small business people. They're engaged in very, very, very small things like barbershops and beauty parlors and tailor shops. But these are people who are getting a lot of support from outside, from Miami and from the Cuban diaspora. So there is money and there are products and goods that are flowing into Cuba to support these small businesses. The regime, the hardliners in the regime are still worried about that. They don't want to create a new class, an independent middle class that has a great deal of independence from the regime. So they are worried about it. But I think nonetheless that Raul is going to proceed with intensifying those reforms. The economy is in terrible shape. They will have grown by less than 1% this year. That's their own official number. It's probably actually less than.
Let me go back to Henry Godinez again with the arts, having to do with theater and other artistic relations with Cuba, and who's been there so many times, born there, brought here at the age of three, something of an outcast in his own family because of his concern for Cuba. 80% of people in Cuba, as I understand it, are still employed by the government. It remains a communist government. Doesn't that mean that there's a lot at stake for the people who are in the regime? And aren't they going to be very powerfully trying to prevent the kind of thing that we're talking about?
Yes, but I think that there is definitely a difference to be drawn between those in the regime, as you stated, the hardliners that are resistant to that sort of economic change, and it's interesting because they have become a sort of class unto themselves. You know, those hardliners, I'm willing to bet you, are not the ones that are really worried about what they're having for dinner that night or, you know, how nice their homes are. I think they tend to do quite well. You're right that even the majority of theater companies and artists and dance companies and so forth are paid through the state, you know, something around $20 a month. But they are also the people that rent rooms in their houses, that own baladares, which are private restaurants basically in people's homes, or what used to be their homes. So those are the people that really would still like to see these reforms continue, especially for the artists and musicians and theater companies and dance companies who would love to tour more, who would love to come to the United States and tour, which for them would be economically beneficial as well. You know, I think that they would love these changes to continue.
Brian Littell, back to you. What do you say to people who are and have been for so many years opposed to Cuba, supportive of the embargo, who say that if we invest in Cuba more, what we'll do is further enrich those hardliners, to use that easy term, that Henry Godinez points out are probably doing quite well at the moment?
Well, there is some truth to this, of course. A lot of the money that's going through the tourism channels is actually getting into the hands of the Cuban armed forces, the generals and the colonels who run the military. The military in Cuba actually controls a pretty substantial portion of tourism. Now, it is shrinking as more and more tourists go in and more opportunities exist, like Airbnb, which one of the other speakers mentioned. The percentage that the Cuban military accesses or controls in tourism is steadily shrinking. But I think overall and by and large, I tell people, look, the country is changing. The change is inevitable. And the opening of Cuba to external forces can only over the longer term be helpful.
Let me go back to Tom Popper with Insight Cuba, the travel company that we know is who's talked so much about what's happening. How difficult would it be to undo the business agreements that have been made already and some that I could take it are continuing to be made as the Obama administration serves out its last months?
Well, I think it would be difficult legally, politically, on many different levels. I mean, one, you have so many of these companies made good faith investments based on current policy. And while it is accurate that it was an executive order, Obama was able to do much of this through the Cuban asset control regulations, those regulations themselves have been really developed and honed since 2011 to kind of advance this detente and bring us up to the point where we're at. So you have very complex regulations within the State Department, U.S. Treasury Department, and while it may be an incoming president's desire to do this thing or that thing, it does take considerable time, and there are other legal documents outside of the Cuban asset control regulations that need to be considered for all this to be done. So it's not as easy as a stroke of the pen. There'll be a lot of resistance. There'll be a lot of resistance in Congress. You have bipartisan support for what's been going on, certainly both sides of the aisle. You have the business interests with the investments. And we also know the Cuban-American community has grown to want the engagement with Cuba where it wasn't so strong in the past.
Henry Godinez, what about Marco Rubio? What about Ted Cruz? They say they won't go along with the normalization until Raul Castro dies and leaves the scene. He is expected to retire in 2018. That's a while.
Well, I mean, I think we should probably consider the fact that Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz owe a good deal of their, you know, political treasury to many in the hardline Cuban American community that have supported them financially over the years. There are, in fact, political action committees that you can go and see exactly how much they have donated to not just Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, but a whole slew of politicians around the country to help continue to to enforce the ineffective 55-year-old policies that they feel and that their supporters feel are important.
So, Tom Popper, what about political money on the other side?
Well, you have there's always been a strong investment in kind of thwarting any engagement with Cuba. But I think the thing with the difference with the business community is that they're making real investments and in the country. And so they're not just political. their capital investments. And so we've seen in the past, really, the Cuban Americans that were detractors of the policy really overspend or outspend those of us who are in favor of normalization of relations. But I think that pendulum has changed. And we've seen that certainly within the number of businesses that have made the investments and are already operating in Cuba.
All right. So obviously, one of the very interesting things to follow as the Trump administration takes over, we will see what Donald Trump really means when he says that he wants the Cubans to have a better deal. Great to have you all. Tom Popper with Insight Cuba Travel Company. It's been operating trips to that island for 16 years. Henry Godinez at the Department of Theater at Northwestern University, also resident artistic associate at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. Brian Littell, formerly with the CIA a long time ago, now an author. His latest book, History Will Absolve Me, Fidel Castro, Life and Legacy, available now on Kindle. And our earlier guest, Michael Weisenstein, Havana Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. Thank you all. Great to have you. Another major cabinet choice by Donald Trump has raised questions about civilian control of the Pentagon. Back with that in a moment on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Support comes from UCLA Extension, presenting the Writer's Studio Home Edition, taking place virtually February 18th through 21st. Choose from 12 workshops taught by industry professionals. Learn more at uclaextension.edu/writers.